webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment that you saw yourself in God and God in you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution. And now, here's Glenn Klein online.
Greetings, you beautiful humans. This is Glenn Klein online, and thank you very much, Robert Moore. It's hump day, Wednesday, November 16th, 2011, the only November 16th, 2011 in the history of humanity. Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, on this Gospel Revolution Wednesday night. Glad to have you along for the ride, in the studio, entrenched in the Bay of the Holy Spirit studio with the very handsome Sean O'Halloran directly to my right and directly to my left over the Gulf of Mexico. Let us go now to the home offices of the Gospel Revolution to, where does he call from? Satsuma?
Satsumi.
Sean says Satsuma.
Satsuma.
Which he's never heard of, but that's what comes over on the caller ID when he calls and he logs on to the Gospel Revolution webcast. Please welcome online the Grand Poobah, the False Christ, the President, the Founder, the Kentucky Colonel, the French Poodle in a boat. What else are you? You're something else. I'm forgetting something.
Most High Holy Reverend.
The Most High Holy Reverend. Please welcome online my friend, Mr. Michael Williams.
Yeah. It's like after all of the titles, you forgot my name.
Michael.
Good evening.
Good evening, Bela. And the Bela Lugosi of the Gospel Revolution.
Yeah. We gave you one tonight.
How are you this evening?
I'm having a really wonderful evening here in Houston. The weather is what you call perfection. And it's been a really good day. I had a lunch today with a friend that lasted for 3 hours talking about the gospel over at a really nice little house restaurant tucked back in a corner where they do gluten-free and fresh everything, and you don't know what's on the menu today until they went to the store. So,
you went out to lunch today, and you talked about the gospel.
Yeah, yes, for 3 hours, along with some other catching up with my friend, and about how the kids are doing, and so yeah, it's good stuff.
What is wrong with you?
Well, I haven't figured that out yet. I'm leaving that to others to decide.
I mean, you spend much of your day writing about, contemplating, discussing the gospel. Finally, you go out for a lunch, and what do you talk about? You talk about the gospel.
The most exciting thing in the world, the gospel.
It is exciting, isn't it?
The power of God. And believe me, it was experienced and a dose of salvation was to be had for everyone. And, it was a very, very good conversation. Right near when we were paying the bill, my cell phone was laying there on the table, and I had part of my sandwich I didn't eat, so they bought one of the little styrofoam things, and I put my sandwich in it and closed it.
All right, hold on. You had half a sandwich left.
Yes, I did.
Okay. I am going to say that you were eating, I'm going to see if I have a word of knowledge right now, the sandwich that you ordered, here's what I'm going to say, was a meatball and cheese sandwich.
I'm at a health food restaurant.
Without gluten in the bread.
Without gluten in the bread. No, this was a fresh roast turkey sandwich.
A fresh roast turkey sandwich.
With provolone. Oh, my gosh. It was really wonderful.
All right. So you've got the takeout box there, the styrofoam box.
And, yes, and my cell phone
and
is laying there.
And your cell phone.
The question came up, but, you know, I still have a question about what God is doing in our daily lives. And this question, I've known this person now for 12, 13 years, maybe something like that. And so this question has come up repeatedly, and she's never been satisfied with any of my answers. And so I told her, I said, well, it's really a difficult thing to say that he's not, because how could I say that he's not? If we are one, then everything we do, God is involved, because we can't separate ourselves from God. And so my sandwich box was there and my cell phone, and she said, oh, I think I get it. And so she took the sandwich box and laid it up on top of my cell phone, and she said, so it's like this. So we're together. And I opened this, I took it off. I said, well, that's closed. So I took the sandwich box and took it off of the cell phone and set it to the side. I opened the sandwich box and I took my cell phone and I put it inside the box and closed the lid. And you would have thought that Jesus appeared or something. It was really funny. And she said, I get it for the first time in my life. I get it. Everything we do, God is involved. God can't be uninvolved if we're one. So the cell phone, you know, I'm looking for that parable of the cell phone and the sandwich box.
The cell phone and the styrofoam takeout box was the key. Now, by the way, just so you know that we know that you know that we know that you know, this is somebody that, Michael, has been in your life pretty much ever since you moved to Houston.
Oh yes,
so,
absolutely.
So it's in not fact, like so. They it's not like they have not heard the gospel before, and it just goes to show you that it might take a little bit of time. Here, folks, is, in my humble opinion, for whatever it's worth, the greatest teacher of the gospel that has ever walked the face of the earth, that has had many private lunches with this individual, many discussions, many demonstrations of the gospel in practice, very much so, in this person's life, and finally, it was the cell phone and the styrofoam container that made it click. I don't know what that's
a
about.
A true parable indeed.
Unbelievable.
So, in the history of the gospel revolution, that will have to become a parable of the gospel revolution, I suppose. But no, it was very wonderful, and it is that it's that simple, you know. It really is a beautiful thing to use the objects at hand to be able to explain it, because everything around us, I think, explains the gospel, and to me, that's the beauty of the gospel, is that anything that you are currently, wherever you're sitting, whatever you're doing, believe me, you are in contact with something that you can reach, that's within reach, that you'll be able to explain the gospel with. It is just that profound.
I was talking to a revolutionary today, and he made the comment that he's noticed that the people that come to the fore in the gospel revolution seem to be more men than women. And, of course, we pointed out that in Christianity, it's exactly the opposite. The leaders are all men. The ones that are taking the money are men. But primarily, the ones that are supporting the men behind the pulpit, the men behind the sign, are women. Why it is that mostly men have been elevated to participation in the gospel revolution, we have no idea. But I reminded him that we had ladies' night a few weeks ago when we just had just
we
women
sure
call,
did.
And the women, whether it be at the convention or at the summits or in other venues, have been very, very important to the effort. So it's just food for thought. Last week on the webcast, Michael, we got into the discussion of the situation at Penn State University here in Pennsylvania in the United States, where a former assistant football coach at Penn State is alleged to have committed multiple acts of pedophilia and sex abuse against young boys, using his charity as the launching off point for his reaching out to these kids. And his name is Jerry Sandusky. Penn State is an incredible football program and university. This has rocked not only the sports world here in the United States, folks, but it has rocked the country. President Obama has commented on it. And today, Michael, on my Facebook, I just put simply, tonight on the webcast, the righteousness of Jerry Sandusky. And one of my women Facebook friends on here put that just might qualify as the most incongruous statement of the year for me. Righteousness and Sandusky in the same sentence is an oxymoron. And speaking of a sentence, she says, his is coming, and boy, he should watch out. So last week when we were talking about this, I mean, this is a moderate response to the situation and the revelations that have come out of State College in Pennsylvania and what they call Happy Valley there. But last week we were talking about the response. We were talking about pedophilia in light of the gospel, and we had the maestro of the gospel revolution, Greg Amberge, on with us at the time. And I want to replay his comments and then your comments and then talk about this perspective that my friend on Facebook commented, which is, of course, widespread, that Sandusky is about to get his.
When you're correct about it, the rubber meeting the road, because, I mean, when we're willing to understand the gospel to the point that we're able to say that Jerry Sandusky and Joe Paterno are righteous and holy before God, that is absolutely the opposite of everything I was taught.
Yeah.
But I understand that now, and it's a sad situation. I think the gospel brings a lot of clarity to it, at least for me.
Greg. Yeah, I think you're right, Greg. It really is amazing that it's funny how we have to categorize somebody, demonize somebody. We need them to not be part of us. We need Hitler to not be part of us. We need pedophiles
right.
to not be part of us. We need murderers to not be part of us. But I think the healthiest thing the human race can do is to embrace that all of these people are part of us. And
Whoa. You just gave a great commercial for the upcoming Mike Williams book. The greatest thing you just said, the greatest thing that we can do is to embrace these people as part of us.
Yes, absolutely.
I
think the only way we can, with clear conscience, judge their actions in a civil society is if we embrace them as part of us. The only way that we can do this with any degree of measuring out punishment according to the crime is if they are part of us. Now, that doesn't mean it certainly doesn't mean that you're going to be more compassionate. You know that, of course, Christians, once somebody's asked forgiveness, they think you ought to just let everybody go. That's not all Christians, but believe me, once they go through a jailhouse conversion and the preacher's on their side and they've really changed, and we need to let them out of prison now. Well, Well, no, I disagree with that.
Wait. Why do you have to put a southern twang on that? That's what I want to know.
Because that's the preachers I've heard do this.
Oh, okay. It sounded authentic to me, but I had to ask.
That's the preachers I've heard do this. And, for me, the justice system we have is really, really messed up.
Yes.
And the only way I see that it can, that our justice system, you can change the system every direction that you want to, but until the reality that we are all equal and one in the eyes of God and that everyone is righteous, I don't think we can mete out proper justice in any justice system, because of the need to demonize people rather than to judge specifically their act or their deed. We must see, and there's that whole thing, we've got to make sure that people know that's not us. I'd never do that. Now, I would never want you to know the thoughts that went through my mind when I heard about their crime or what they did or any of those things. So you see, I have to make sure that you know that I think they're of the devil and we're of God. But see, when you get rid of your own righteousness, you don't need to have to draw those lines between you and people who do not act like you. You truly can judge, and when I'm talking about judging, I'm not talking about God's judgment. I'm talking about judging a situation as to whether or not it is equitable or whether fairness or a crime has taken place or not. We must move our judicial system out of this Christian mindset because it ain't working. We've got people abusing the system so badly, all the way from the cop on the beat all the way through to the judge. And this mindset explained to me by one of the FBI's finest that was a 32-year veteran of FBI. He explained to me that after he understood the gospel, he was head of legal counsel for the FBI for 10 years. And he explained to me that the reason for this was because of the us against them mentality gets into law enforcement, and it creates this hostile environment of us against them because most of the people who get involved in law enforcement are drawn out of Christian families. Now, that was his assessment, not mine. And he said because of their strong sense of justice, which having a strong sense of justice is a good thing. But if it comes from a strong sense of self-righteousness, it will be perverted justice.
All right. I wanted you guys to hear that in context because we're going to talk about that. Because as I promoted the show tonight on my Facebook page, I said the righteousness of Jerry Sandusky, and the response of my Facebook friend was, that is the most oxymoronic statement that they had ever heard. Michael, you talked about self-righteousness, but from a gospel perspective, because of the cross, how does God see Jerry Sandusky, this man who has been now arrested and accused of these horrible acts against young boys?
On the terms of righteousness based on the covenant that was made between God and Jesus for the human race, he sees him the same way that he sees me, the same way that he sees Hitler, the same way that he sees the Pope, the same way that he sees President Obama, the same way he sees a newborn child, the same way he sees a 98-year-old man gasping for his last breaths before he leaves this life. He sees Jerry Sandusky as righteous, perfect, and holy. This is the common denominator that gives us the ability to look into these things instead of having to separate this from me, it gives us an opportunity to try to understand. Now, that does not mean my attempt to understand should lessen his sentence. Anybody who knows me knows that that is not true, especially when it comes to issues of children and any type of abuse, especially sexual abuse. And this man wasn't just a pedophile. This man, if the charges are true, he wasn't just a sexual predator. He is guilty of sexual assault.
Right. And one of the things that you hear in the media when people were trying to give Joe Paterno, the legendary, now former head coach of Penn State, when they were trying to give him a break in this, saying that he did not report this to the authorities, he did not report this to the police, that he only had taken it to the athletic director of Penn State. One of the things that they said was, well, imagine if that was your son and a coach found out about it. How would you feel then? Well, you can answer that question because the gospel, which had been in your life for a long time, this concept of all people being righteous and perfect and holy and sinless in the sight of God, you were confronted with this very issue as your daughter came to you and told you that her brother-in-law, your son-in-law, had been molesting her from the time she was 7 years old. So you can actually, in a direct parallel, completely relate to this. Your response when confronted with this was much different than the head coach of Penn State and the athletic director and the president of Penn State University.
Well, as far as their reactions to it overall, I'm not sure mine would have been a whole lot different as far as the outrage about it. I'm not sure if you're talking about their cover up of these things or what.
They did not take this to the law enforcement agency.
No, they did not.
When you were confronted with this, you did.
Yes. And even though it was my family, I knew the ramifications of the cost of going to the authorities. But and I also understood that my son-in-law was righteous and holy in God's eyes, which after he was arrested in my time with him, which I told my daughter I needed man-to-man time alone with him. And the first thing that I told him was that he needed to understand that he is righteous and holy and perfect in God's sight, and that he has no problem with God, but he does have a problem with me in the state of Illinois. So what this did for me, what the gospel did for me, was give me clarity to separate these issues and not, to have someone say that righteous and holy and Jerry Sandusky are an oxymoron, that is, my brain just won't even accept hardly that people can't see the reality of this and how much more clarity comes.
Well, here's the interesting thing, and I think we can say this with a high level of confidence, that my Facebook friend that wrote that and the people that did not report the multiple incidents of reported child abuse and sex abuse, and as you say, assault, the ones that did not report that to the authorities, both of them do not understand the gospel and the power of the cross and the blood of Yeshua, the blood of Christ.
Yeah, the reason that people hide from these things is because of almost this fear of that I cannot associate with them. I cannot be seen as being a part of them. I can't expose them because it's almost like we're afraid of exposing ourselves or something.
I cannot extend to them any kind of acceptance or love or compassion and still have the legal system in my mind
yes.
Go forward it's an amazing thing when you can, which you have done, where you can go for in a legal procedure and understand that the person that you want, in your case, the state of Illinois, in this case, the state of Pennsylvania, where you want those people that are in positions of authority to prosecute to the fullness of the legal system.
Yes, absolutely. And in my opinion, the legal system does not prosecute child molesters nearly to the extent that it needs to be. And it's not an issue of the degree of punishment, but the one thing that has been proven time and again is that pedophilia is not a curable state of mind. It is a sexuality, and that to release these people back into society is to release them to do the same thing again. And I think the repeat offense level in pertaining to pedophiles and people who've criminally used children is over 95%. You don't have repeat offenses like that on murder. You have people who murder, and that's probably the only murder they're ever going to commit in most cases. In most cases, it's crime of passion, caught your girlfriend with somebody, you know, the situation got out of control, there was alcohol and jealousy, and bam, the next thing you know, somebody's dead, but this is their first time they've ever killed anybody, and they're 40 years old, they're 50 years old,
right,
they're 30 years
right.
old, they're 60 years old.
The vast majority of murderers do not repeat that offense.
They are not repeat offenders.
That's not to say that people that murder do not. But what we're saying is that pedophiles that are not caught repeat that action over and over and over again. And the only answer, folks, because it is a sexual orientation. You think you can change somebody from being straight to gay? You think you can change somebody from being gay to straight? No, you can't. You can no more change somebody from being a heterosexual to something else as you can from having somebody be a pedophile. And so the only answer is to separate them from children so that they don't have any opportunity, because they will woo them in. If there's any thing that this story of Jerry Sandusky tells us classically, is that they will set up an entire... Jerry Sandusky was found to be doing this while he was an assistant coach at one of the greatest institutions for football in the country. And they gave him a choice. So obviously they knew something was going on. They gave him a choice between continuing as an assistant football coach at Penn State with the very real possibility. He was considered an heir apparent to Joe Paterno at Penn State. They gave him a choice. Continue with the football program or give up your charity for children. And he chose to give up the football and to continue with the charity for children. That tells you about all you need to know.
Yeah, because it's not just this case, but that's true in every situation. With pedophilia, the proclivity is to the degree to where that not only are the children groomed to accept the pedophile's advances, but also the people around them are groomed to not question their deeds. And also, if they're accused, they are groomed to never doubt that whether or not they could be guilty or not. No one in my son-in-law's life would have ever conceived the possibility. And, you know, as I remember back one of the conversations I had with him early on in his relationship with my daughter, I think they were married, but he told me that his lifelong goal and dream was to be the girls' basketball coach at high school. And now, see, I hesitate in saying that because here's the thing. And I've heard a couple of news people make this statement, and you've got to be careful to not implicate everybody who truly wants to help children. Everybody who starts a an organization to help children. Everybody, every adult who wants to coach a girl's basketball, or anybody who wants to run a daycare system, you just cannot allow that to be the first thought to your brain. However, we live in a society where you have to try to know what's going on. Now, with Jason, where there is no way we would have ever known what was going on. There were some signs that could only be seen. And for people who've been through some things in life, they'll understand this statement. There are things you can only see in hindsight. And, man, for a little while, I really beat myself up because until I realized that my view of these things were only visible in hindsight as to the fact of what was actually taking place. They were not visible. The very same situations were not visible while they were going on. They were visible only in hindsight after the information was there.
Right, and most of the people that are very upset and want Jerry Sandusky and Joe Paterno and this other assistant coach, McCrary, or McQuarrie, I guess his name is, who apparently walked in on an incident in the shower with Sandusky and a 10 or 11-year-old boy. I mean, they want them crucified. I would say most of those people would consider themselves Christians. And
that want them crucified, or the people who were involved?
The people that were, well, the people that were involved, they want them crucified. And most of the people that are making those kind of judgments against Sandusky and Joe Paterno and McQuarrie would consider themselves Christians. But here's what we would say. They don't understand the power of the cross. They don't understand that literally all unrighteousness from the entire human race, including Jerry Sandusky, was removed from them at the cross. When the blood was shed, when Yeshua was nailed to that tree and buried and resurrected, when that whole thing went down, a new race of people was formed, Michael, in God's sight, and the sin and the unrighteousness of the past race that had come from the first Adam ceased to exist.
Yes, absolutely. Now, the thing of it is, too, though, is that I would say that my outrage against these people, I don't think that there's somebody out there more outraged than I am about not only the people who perpetrated this crime, but those who could have stopped it. And my goodness, of course, all the truth has to come to the surface, and, you know, we need to just stop beating this dead dog to death as far as right now is concerned, but the fact of it is that there is no greater outrage in anybody's heart than mine. The difference is I embrace the fact that these people are part of us. They are not now non-humans. They are now not, but we've got to see them as monsters.
Right. We have to see them as not Christians. We have to see them as of the devil. We have to see them as evil,
right,
as apart from God. But they are no more apart from God as Mother Teresa or Martin Luther King Jr. or Abraham Lincoln or anybody that they would consider having done well in their lives.
I believe this is where that the logic of how to deal with this really comes forward when we remove this demonization out of the equation. But there's a safe place for us, folks. As long as you can accept there's one Redeemer and only one chosen of God to redeem the world. There was a lot of people chosen of God to bring forth the manifestation of the Redeemer, but just one Redeemer. Judas was chosen by God and preordained to do what he did. But Jesus was the only one chosen and foreordained by God to redeem the world. We are all chosen of God, but we've got to realize what we're chosen for. We were chosen for redemption, and our selection in that choosing has been done. we were born into this righteous and holy, unlike the people before the cross and those who were alive at the cross who went through this transition while alive. We've never gone through this transition from God being angry with us to God now accepting us. But in the fact that we are all one in the human race, we have all gone through it. Because in Christ, we all died. In Christ, we all suffered. In Christ, we all were raised again. In Christ, and Sandusky was not left out of that, neither was anyone else. Inside that equation, Glenn, lies the ability to think further than what we could to find answers and solutions for these things.
Why is that?
Because it's where the mind and logic works best. You see, once my mind goes to the spiritual nature of this, I no longer am logical about it. I am thinking spiritual, not logical. And any Christian will tell you that spirituality is not logical. Faith is not logical. You just got to go with faith. But you see, at these times, we cannot afford to dismiss logic and reason in the middle of these horrible things, because the goal is to protect children from this ever happening. We can't rush to, and I have no disagreement with the punishment to the fullest extent of the law for this guy, but you see, the focus has to be, how do we keep children safe from these situations? And no matter how much outrage we have at Sandusky, it is not going to protect the next child that comes along from another pedophile. It is the ability to find out what's wrong with the system and stop and think about it and be willing to do something about it. But because of the politics of the law and our judicial system, this will probably come and go, and nothing will ever change to protect children in this nation any further than what we have.
Right, because one of the things that Greg pointed out last week was that when this initial allegation and revelation came to the fore, this was in the 90s, was smack dab in the middle of the Roman Catholic pedophile scandal.
Yeah, absolutely.
And many of these guys were Catholics. It's not like they weren't aware of it. You guys, this kind of reaction, this visceral hatred, this over-the-top, irrational approach to this whole situation causes more people not only to go underground, but to do it more. Because there's something in the unrenewed mind, in the unsaved mind, if you will, that causes people to want to do it more when it has this kind of reaction. When we come back, we're going to be talking to a gentleman who inspired and, well, has consistently inspired us, but specifically on the issue of self-righteousness that Michael mentioned in the clip. And we're going to get to that when we return right here on the Gospel Revolution Radio Network.
In the beginning, God said, "Let us make man in our own image, male and female, and call them Adam." And it was good. In the fall, the image of God was corrupted, but not forever.
When God created man in his own image, and we're not talking about somebody else creating an image, we're talking about God himself creating man in his own image. And then the fall of man, God knew he would have to destroy his own image. Let me tell you something I know now about the new creation, that your heart is designed by God to suffer, endure, and recover from all loss, no matter how horrific the loss is.
The Image of God. This 6-CD series is available for $48 plus shipping and handling, or download it now for $24 by clicking the download link at gospelrevolution.com. The Image of God. Get your copy today.
The whole issue of self-righteousness, the whole issue of seeing any kind of proper standing in God apart from the work of Christ, was beautifully highlighted in a e-newsletter that came out as Michael comprised the top 10 reasons to forego and let go of self-righteousness. And that email and that newsletter was prompted and inspired by our next caller online. Now let us go to the west coast of the U.S. of A., to Garden Grove, California, the king of comedy, the king of the can, the Dr. Dolittle of the Gospel Revolution. Please welcome online Mr. Richard Mull. Richard!
Present, accounted for, partially sane, and yes, Dr. Dolittle calling in to talk to some animals. Are you have any animals there?
We've got some animals, my friend.
Well, like I've told so many others, I speak toucan and Pacific, and African gray parrot, but I don't do pink flamingos.
Well, thank you for that update. Of course, Richard has been battling stage 4 cancer, and we've been talking about it pretty much every week. Haven't heard from him for a few weeks. How you doing, brother?
Well, at my last checks and tests, which was last week on Monday, they have come to a determination based on blood test results, lab results, PET scans, and about anything else you could think of, that the cancer is stable, but it's not decreasing or increasing. It's just period, stable period, not doing anything. So it's kind of sitting there dormant right now, which is, it's good. That's good news. I'm glad to hear that. But not as good as the gospel, which is better news, much better.
Well, today, do you want to share with the beautiful humans around the planet what you experienced today?
Well, it depends on which incident we're referring to.
The incident that where you went to the doctor.
Oh, yes.
And why they asked you in and how that went.
Yes, I was based on my disability claims with the Veterans Administration, being as I'm retired military veteran, time in combat and so forth, they require that you have a psychiatric evaluation. So I was sent to see a psychiatrist over 15, 20 minutes from my house, and I was driven over there, and I waited, and I got in to see him, and he introduced himself and started writing down information about me, asking me questions about different things in my life, my military service and my time in combat and all kinds of things to determine if there's a basis there for a disability claim. Because I had submitted a claim for exposure to Agent Orange when I was in Vietnam that might have caused the cancer and might not have. And the VA Veterans Administration is telling me that I need to prove that my cancer was caused by Agent Orange. And they already have their own rules set aside for that, so there's no way I'm going to come up with proof. So ergo, seeing a psychiatrist to find out if there are some other issues there out of the war and out of my military service and my disability and so forth with the cancer in my body that would cause them to change their minds and maybe give me some disability based on my mental state of mind, my mental capabilities or abilities at the present time. Not knowing, of course, that I have the gospel in me and that I have a rational, vital, mental disposition and I'm not really concerned about all that stuff, but he asked the right questions and even coached me in what answers I should give in order to defeat the VA, the Veterans Administration, not defeat them, but assist them in their claim in giving me a positive response instead of a negative one, saying I have to prove it. So that went pretty well, and after all was said and done and the doctor released me, or just before he told me that, or asked me if I'd gone to going into church, and I said, no, I don't go to a building where people gather. My wife does, but I don't. And then he said, Richard, I have a church here that I go to in Newport Beach, and the pastor, and he gave me the name, and I know the pastor, and I know the church. And I think I was there once with a friend of mine years ago. But this is a church that's consisting mostly of retired military veterans from all different services, branches of service, within the government, and he wanted me to come down and visit. So I told him, I'll make some time eventually to come down there. They have two services, or three on Sunday and one on Wednesday evening. So I'm gonna check into that. But when he released me, I pronounced myself partially sane and went about my business.
Well,
that brings you up to date on today.
Well, we appreciate the update very much. So going into this meeting to have your psychological examination and to be judged by this psychiatrist or psychologist as to whether or not you would be liable for, or not liable, but what's the word I'm looking for?
Eligible?
Eligible, thank you. Eligible for the Veterans Administration benefits. You know, and I never thought about the fact, because here's a guy, ladies and gentlemen, that doesn't smoke or drink or chew or hang around with girls that do, that has had cancer riddle his body. It never occurred to me that it might have been your exposure to Agent Orange in Vietnam. But you're the guy, Richard, that said to Michael a few weeks ago that you had completely given up on your own self-righteousness. And that, of course, inspired Mike's top 10 reasons to give up on self-righteousness. When you hear the story of Jerry Sandusky in Pennsylvania, how much more righteous do you feel than the former assistant football coach at Penn State?
No, that's a good question. You know, we're all equal in this. We're all in it together on this earth. Doesn't matter if we know the gospel or don't know the gospel. Believe in God, don't believe in God. Trust Jesus, don't trust Jesus. Trust ourselves, don't trust ourselves. We're all in this equally. And just before you guys got on the air tonight, I was reading Hebrews chapter 11, the hall of faith. And I keep going back to the last two verses, and Michael has gone over this many times. In webcasts and in real life outside the webcast, which, you know, can be a fantasy for some people. But
Wait. You're saying this isn't real life?
No, I'm just saying that for some people, the webcast can be a fantasy, an escape, a place where they go so they can fantasize about, well, I am right with God, and I hear this, and this makes me feel good. And then the minute the webcast is over, they go back to their old life under self-righteousness.
Oh, but, you know, that's good preaching, Roberts, right there. See, that's something that you folks need to understand, that the webcast for Richard and me and Michael and, generally speaking, the people that you hear on a regular basis on this radio program, it's just an extension of a phone call, isn't it, Richard?
That's exactly what it is. Verse 39, Hebrews chapter 11. And these all, having obtained a good report through faith, received not the promise. Now, the promise is, you know, it's all in there. Righteousness, redemption, sanctification, all this is rolled into one promise. Therefore, God, having provided some better thing for us, that they without us should not be made perfect. So, Sandusky, Paterno, all these other people, they're all perfect. It doesn't matter. Franco Harris, who just lost his job because he supported Joe Paterno, he lost his job. One of my heroes in football, probably, I think, one of the finest running backs that's ever come out of any college or university across the United States to play in the NFL, and he played at Penn State. Franco Harris. So I'm just going to be honest with you. We don't need to be self-righteous for others and allow our self-righteousness to show while we're pointing fingers at somebody else. They're all as righteous as we are, and there's no difference between us. And I'm standing on that, and I'm never going to move from that. I cannot be shaken.
Michael, the beautiful humans across the globe just had a little peek into the window of what those sessions at Richard's company must be like when he shares the gospel.
Yeah, you know, here, for those that don't know, Richard is battling two forms of stage 4 cancer. And yet, still, I think it's an every other Friday situation. He goes back to the corporation where he is now has a permanent disability from, and he goes back there and shares the gospel in a conference room, which is available to several hundred people across the nation via the recordings that he does there. And always is such a great encouragement to everyone. They're all the time asking him, you know, how he's doing it, why he's doing it. But Richard has a real passion in his heart to just love on people. I don't know a greater lover of people other than God himself than Richard Mull. He just loves people. And he loves people I don't like. But anyway, they're amazed at what he's doing. And to be able to have this relationship that I have now and have had for almost 20 years with Richard has been a very rich thing. And now he's in battle for his life, and the things that he has understood about the gospel is probably gotten, not probably, that has gotten much stronger in him. He's not looking for God to heal him. He's not looking for a supernatural intervention into his situation. But because he is freed from all of the superficial spirituality of Christianity or any other religion on the face of the earth, because he's freed from that, his mind and his emotions are free to deal with cancer. You see, when you begin to spiritualize cancer, that it's from God, it's the devil, or a prayer will do it, or cast the devil out of him, whatever the external spiritualization of cancer can be, and believe me, throughout the religious world, it can be a myriad of things. But you see, Richard has called all those things home, and he said, no, and one at a time, over the years, Richard and I both have gone through this process pretty much together, pretty much in sync. And but he's tossed those things away to where that his spirituality is rooted in nothing but who he is, not what he does. And now what he does about cancer can be done with a clear mind and without emotions of self-pity, without emotions of woe is me, or without the emotions of, you know, my life could end. He embraces all of those possibilities, but it is with a degree of stability that I'm telling you, I don't think I've ever seen before. And not to put anybody else in the other, you know, if something like this happens to you and you become a absolute mess, then, hey, we're all going to be right there with you. This isn't the standard as to where we're going to look as to see whether or not you have the gospel or not. But this is just Richard's situation, and he has shown, and nobody instructed, believe me, I didn't instruct Richard as to how to handle cancer. I don't know how to handle cancer. I've never had cancer.
You know how to handle cancer, because you were no less told you had cancer than Richard has been.
I was no less told, but I haven't had to go through.
No,
I
understand, but
and all
I,
of that.
No, I
believe
understand.
Me that pain has a voice. I'm telling you, the voice of pain is so loud, and I take pills. I was talking to one of my friends earlier, and he's going through a situation. And I asked him, I said, you know, are you taking anything? And he said, no. He says, I'm in these situations, I would rather let my body learn to fight off things, which I really admire that.
Right.
But I'm a coward. If I got pain, I'm taking a pill. I'm going to help my body fight it off.
But I have to ask Richard, and then we're going to have to let him go, because we're coming up against the clock already, believe it or not.
Boy, we are.
Yeah. Richard, how have you dealt with that voice? The voice of pain, the voice of the doctor's report.
You know, I'm not a stranger to pain. I was in the military for over 21 years, served in combat, got beat up, shot down, shot at, crashed an aircraft, you name it. I'm no stranger to pain. And when your focus is on what you need to be doing at the time, whatever it was, like rescuing somebody or picking up somebody off a landing zone or fighting back the enemy or just preserving your own life, you don't focus on pain. You focus on the thing at hand that is most dear to you, the thing that is deep in your heart, and at that time it was survival. And the pain is secondary, tertiary. You don't even notice it. Even when you get a foot blown off or a hand blown off or whatever, you don't really focus on the pain. If you've got a purpose in mind and a focus going on within you, it's the same way with the gospel. When you have the gospel in you and your focus is on the gospel and on Christ and what he did at the cross, and knowing that you're one with God, you don't have to focus on these other things and let them overwhelm you, overcome you, overburden you. You just keep your focus on the gospel. And these other things just kind of fall by the wayside, and they just kind of drop off like, you know, feathers off a bird eventually when he's growing new feathers, or whatever, scales off a lizard or a snake shedding his skin. It doesn't matter. It's just a natural process that happens. And these things just fall by the wayside.
Well, we have to attest, in all due diligence and honesty, that we have been privileged to witness the new feathers growing on Richard Malmichael.
Hey, I'm fuzzy. I got a nice goose down growing on me, but not on my head. My head is just the same way it's been. It's just bright and shiny.
All right, well,
your head is helpless, Richard.
Richard, I just got an email from one of your favorite beautiful humans, from Carla. She says, please tell Richard how much I love him.
Well, the feeling is exactly mutual. She's wonderful. She's a treasure, a gem, and precious.
No doubt. I concur, my friend.
All right. Well, all right, yeah. I appreciate you having me on. Thank you so much.
No, we appreciate you calling, and we hope you got saved tonight.
Oh, definitely. The whole time I'm listening, I'm getting saved. I love every minute of it.
Thank you, Richie. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Bye, Michael. Bye, Glenn.
Bye-bye.
There's Richard Mull, the Dr. Dolittle of the Gospel Revolution. We're up against the clock.
Did you hear him sneak in at the end there? Did you hear him sneak in at the end there? Bye, Sean.
I did not hear
Richard never leaves anybody out.
I did not hear him say bye, Sean. I'm glad you mentioned that. Without any further ado, please let us go to a man that's been holding on for, for pretty much the whole show. Let us go to the great state of Virginia, in Stafford, Virginia. Please welcome online the Gospel Revolutionary, the Facebook Gospel Revolutionary, Mr. Germa Colston. Germa!
Hi, Glenn, Mike.
Germa.
Hey, Germa.
Germa, how saved have you gotten tonight?
that's hard to tell, really, but I can feel that I have gotten more saved than I was an hour ago.
Exactly. You can feel it, bro. You can absolutely feel the effect of the gospel. Is that not accurate?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, I can start speaking in tongues.
Am I coming in clear, guys?
Yeah, you sound
good.
You sound great. What's on your heart?
Yeah, because there's just a lot of rain here, so sometimes it cuts in and out. Mike, I meant to mean to call in for a while about the Book of Acts, the story of Ananias and Sapphira. And I know that certainly the Book of Acts is not scripture, and we don't really go to there to get our doctrine, go to the scriptures to establish doctrine. But assuming that the story even happened, with Ananias and Sapphira dying, falling down at a prayer meeting or whatever, I suspect that maybe it's quite possible that Peter was, and somehow Apostle Peter was responsible for their deaths. Maybe he was the one who actually killed them.
I suspect food poisoning.
Food poisoning?
You know, I might as well, because it's going to be a speculation.
I mean, food poisoning sucks. I mean, that's just the bottom line.
And but the, you know, if indeed, as you said, Germa, if the story, if the story about this event happening to them is true, the one thing we know by the gospel is that the disciples' perception of the truth of the reality of the gospel was not clear then, and may never have been clear throughout their entire ministry. Peter still preached judgment, the very same one who was involved in this whole situation there that day. Peter still preached judgment up until the end of his ministry. His letters are filled with judgment and anger and wrath and Jude pulls, I think Jude just kind of copied and pasted one of the chapters out of Peter's writings. And but the thing that we know, we do know Peter had still had a belief that God was judging people. We know that. We also know that God was not judging people anymore at that time. If there's anything true about the gospel, it is the gospel of peace. And that is the cessation of all hostility between God and man. It certainly wasn't a cessation of man's hostilities toward God, because man is still angry toward God because of what religion tells us about God. But it certainly was a cessation of all hostility, any anger or wrath or even jealousy that was in the heart of God completely was dissipated because of the cross. There is no angry God left anymore. Now, if this were the judgment of God as Peter perceived it to be, do I think Peter perceives this to be the judgment of God? Yes, I do, because he preached that throughout his earthly ministry. His time here on earth, it was his letters that he wrote is filled with judgment. And God judging this and judging that, but we know from Paul's teaching about the gospel of peace. Do you know in Peter, James, John, and Jude, they never mention the gospel of peace. The gospel of peace is not a part of their working understanding. They never mention the first Adam. Their whole focus about the gospel was based on their perception of Jesus as a teacher. Paul's only perception of the gospel was Jesus as a sacrifice, because Paul wasn't around for the teachings. But we do know that Peter still preached judgment long after these days of about Ananias and Sapphira, and also long past the days of King Herod, who gave a great speech, and they said because he didn't give glory to God that he was eaten with worms. I don't doubt that he might have been eaten with worms, but it was not a judgment of God. It's virtually impossible. If these things took place with Ananias and Sapphira, and it would be even a stroke of a moment after the death of Jesus, if God punished somebody the moment, a millisecond after Jesus died on the cross, God is a liar.
And Scripture's lie.
Jesus is a fraud.
Did you hear what Germa said, Michael?
What's that?
And the Scriptures are a lie.
And the Scriptures are a lie.
Yeah, that's powerful.
Because the Scriptures made it very clear that once Jesus died on the cross, the announcement by Isaiah, especially in chapter 54, it's not isolated to chapter 54, but it is the entire chapter and clarified beyond anyone's possibility to misunderstand, that once this happened, God said, not only will I never be angry with you, I will never rebuke you.
All right, wait. Michael, you just said beyond anybody's ability to misunderstand. And yet,
yes.
Isaiah 54 and Isaiah 53, and we could name so many passages from the Law, the Psalms, and the Prophets, have been misunderstood.
No, I don't agree. They have not been misunderstood. They have not been accepted. It's impossible to misunderstand Isaiah 54. It is because they've been told that other writings have validity along with this. So it's not misunderstood. It is ignored. If you've got books, you know, on three or four people's opinions on things, and one is right and the other two are wrong, and you're paying attention to what the other two that are incorrect, it's not because you misunderstand the one that's right. It's because you've chosen to listen to the others. And this is the problem with Christianity. We have insisted that people listen. In fact, there are Christian churches that tell people, forget the Old Testament altogether. Don't even read it. I was around a group of those when I was in Christianity. We were just told, just not even read. Just don't even read the Old Testament. man, now that I understand the things that I do and perceive the things that I do, that is one of the most hideous things that anybody could tell somebody who was wanting to understand Jesus, wanting to understand the cross, and wanting to understand what this provided to the entire human race. You see, the New Testament offers the possibility that people might still go to hell after the cross. It gives the possibility, there are writings in the New Testament that give the possibility God might be, in fact, insist that God is still angry. Those writings are in the New Testament. These writings are the opinions of men. They are the disciples, but the only thing Jesus ever said is you guys have no faith and you have no understanding. He never gave them an assessment, wow, you guys have got this now. But the one thing that we know, whether they understood or did not understand, the one thing we know is Isaiah 54 is crystal clear. And the covenant of my peace shall never be removed off of the earth, saith God. The people who are living under the scourge of the mentality that God is angry with them, they've got a disease. You know, one of the reasons, the greatest reason that Richard is making through this the way he is because it has not crossed his mind that this might be a punishment or a judgment from God or something that he failed to do for the Lord that has allowed the devil in or God to do it. None of that has penetrated his mind. You see, if those things were there, his mental and emotional disposition would be consumed to try to figure that out, not deal with cancer. Now he can deal with something many humans have to deal with. We all have to deal with the inevitability of death, all of us do, whether we know it or not. But not all of us will deal with cancer. But you see, Richard is dealing only with cancer. He's not dealing with an angry God. He's not dealing with the devil. He's not dealing with any of that. So he gets to deal with this with the faculties that he is given and endowed by God to deal with it, plus having a heart infused with truth. So here you deal with this, but see, you get these things involved, and I'm so glad you called in, Germa, because see, this Ananias and Sapphira situation in Acts and also King Herod and Peter's teachings on judgment and anger and wrath and but see, it's the same Peter who presided over this Ananias and Sapphira situation. If anybody, I cannot emphasize to you any stronger than what we're saying tonight, if the millisecond after the cross, God was even ticked off with somebody, if he even rebuked somebody, the cross is completely in vain. There can be zero, there can be no judgment whatsoever after Jesus and God agreed that all punishment and anger and wrath about sin would end in his death. And Isaiah also prophesied that God would see the suffering of his soul and be satisfied. God is satisfied. It is over. It is finished, which frees the heart and mind up for the human being here to deal with life as it is. Not that I failed God, that God's mad at me, that God's unhappy with me, or all of these things, or karma. Let me tell you, this whole belief in karma is just a deadly Christian doctrine in another package.
In another religion.
In another religion, and all it is Christian beliefs. And people think they've clean escaped Christianity, but I believe in karma. What is karma? Well, I believe that when you do something, that there is a spiritual world that's going to bring that back to you and judge you or reward you based on what you've done.
Here's what karma is, folks. Karma is that you will reap what you sow. That is what karma is. That is horse hockey, punk. Hey, Gerb.
Yeah?
How much do you love this stuff?
I love it more than anything else.
I know.
Really.
And dude, you every day, every frickin' day, you represent. You represent to the planet, or at least all your friends and whoever can see your wall on Facebook. And Mike, for some reason, and I have to ask him why, Gurma has been promoting the ministry particularly recently. I mean, not that he hasn't in the past, but you have been promoting Mike's teaching ministry, Gurma, and proudly proclaiming that you have received so much about the grace of God and the gospel from a gay man. Why'd you do that?
Just simply because that, you know, Mike's sexuality never was a stumbling block. You know, I was able to look past that even the first time I heard him. And Gurma, I think that's the best thing. See, a lot of people try to hide my sexuality when they're sharing with people because they think, well, they just can't handle that.
Hold on, Mikey. Gurma, you have found that to be absolutely 100% the truth, even recently, haven't you?
Absolutely.
What have people said to you when finding out that your gospel teacher, the teacher of grace that you listen to the most and that you respect the most, is homosexual?
Oh, yeah. There's some friends around here that don't even want to hang out with me anymore because I was to a gay preacher, which is, you know. And, of course, they just, to me, it's just, they're just looking for, you know, just it's just an excuse to not even really consider the message of grace, just because, I mean, what is that person's, you know, sexuality have to do with it, or their lifestyle, or anything in their life?
Right. As far as the law is concerned, Michael, it would be no different to say that I cannot receive from an overweight preacher, or I cannot receive the grace of God from somebody that might have lied in their past. As far as the law is concerned, here's the thing, folks. I cannot receive the grace of God, the sharing of the gospel from somebody that has had sex with their wife too close to their menstrual cycle. I cannot receive the grace of God and the gospel from somebody that has had barbecued ribs in the last 2 weeks. you guys scoff at that. That's the truth. You don't know. You do not know how God condemned people that ate shrimp, that ate lobster, that ate barbecue ribs, that ate ham. You're all going to have ham on Christmas. You might as well have had homosexual sex on Christmas Day.
Or be a pedophile.
Or be a pedophile, as far as God is concerned.
Even more.
Which was the amazing thing about the law, that it was given to condemn all so that we would get the revelation that we were all redeemed. And that's the powerful force of that. You know, and when Gurma here, let me encourage you in this. The fact that the people get angry, the one thing that you've done is introduce an equation to them they have never considered. A gay man preaching the gospel, and you are not ashamed of it or me.
Absolutely.
And see,
not.
That is the thing. That is when you share along these lines, where it's just gut level, that's the reason I say, just tell people. Because their initial reaction is not the final reaction to the gospel anyway. And part of helping people understand the gospel is probably telling them that the person you've learned from is gay, because God knows there's nobody who's sharing any of gospel with anybody who qualifies by God's law to do it. No one qualifies by God's law to do it. We qualify for the same reason we're sharing the message. We qualify because of the sacrifice of Jesus, and nothing more and nothing less.
Exactly. Nobody who shares this good news, that shares the redemption of the Messiah, is any more or less qualified than a gay man, than somebody who has ever thought of having sex outside of the biblical, not of the current 21st century, marriage model, but the biblical model, which is way different. Yeah, I hear you, Gurma. Wow. It is absolutely absurd, beautiful humans, to consider that anybody anybody who has never had a thought outside the sexual union that is defined in the scriptures, that is defined in the law, is any more or less qualified to share the gospel than a gay man or woman. Or a pedophile, for that matter. That's how powerful the blood of Jesus Christ is. That is how powerful the blood of Yeshua is. Germa, I cannot thank you enough for calling tonight, bro. I cannot thank
Amazing.
You enough. I cannot thank yeah. you enough for doing what you're doing on Facebook. Just keep doing what you want to do, bro.
Yeah, I mean, if Mike is if we're going to disqualify Mike, then we'd have to disqualify anybody.
There's exactly.
Like,
there's
nobody
no...
who thinks about moving their ox on the Sabbath.
Come on now, brother, preach it. Come on, preach it. You want to move your ox on the Sabbath, you people? You are no more qualified than a pedophile.
Can't move your ass on the Sabbath.
Oh, now you're going to meddling, Michael. Germa, thank you.
I love God's law. I really do love God's
I
law.
Know. I know. Awesome? It's fantastic. But God's law is fantastic. You know why God's law is fantastic? You know why, folks, that Germa says, I love God's law? Because we know what its purpose was.
Yeah.
We love the law of God. At the Gospel Revolution, we love the law of God. We honor the law of God because we know what the purpose was. Michael, what was the purpose of the law of God?
It was to reveal sin and the true sin, the sin we inherited from one man so that we could understand the righteousness of to be inherited by one man. The law came years after, but the law could not take away the promise that God had made. It could not do it. And the promise of God, which was through Abraham, came to us. And this covenant of the law that came, Paul said it could not stop the promise that had come. And we have that promise now. We have that promise who in Christ, whether someone is a believer or unbeliever, they espouse other religions, the amazing thing about the gospel is, and about the law, is that the law has concluded us all equal. Whether you rode your donkey on Sabbath, or picked up your bed, or whatever,
or healed, or how about healed somebody on the Sabbath,
or even healed somebody.
You want to be guilty of the law, folks. Heal somebody between Friday at sundown and Saturday at sundown. Save somebody's life. Help somebody on a corner. Do anything. Have any kind of physical motion beside the prescribed religious doctrine of the Sabbath in the Old Covenant, and you will be guilty as Jerry Sandusky is in the eyes of American society tonight. Holy.
And thank God that through Christ, all of that has been wiped away. There's no existence of this law. There's no existence of sin. We stand before God free, and now we're here on this earth with the power of God, the gospel, to work these things out. That's why we cannot go into a self-righteous judgment mode of anybody, because all it's going to do is take away the freedom we have to deal with this vitally, rationally, and in a mental disposition that will bring results.
And logically. We're going to deal with things logically. Hey, Germa, you want to hear good news?
Tell me.
The entire teaching of Mike at the Tampa Summit 2 weekends ago is now online at gospelrevolution.com. You can download it. You can just freaking download it. And you will hear the origination of Christianity as Michael taught it in context from James, Peter, and John.
Awesome.
It's at gospelrevolution.com. You will love it.
I'll have to take a look at it.
All right.
Thanks, Germa.
Bye, Germa.
Take care. Love you guys.
We love you. Thanks for calling, bro.
Love you too, Germa.
Okay.
Right. Bye-bye.
Here's my interpretation, my imitation of Germa Colston. It's a very low, very considered voice and thought.
He's a methodical man.
He's the man. We love the Germa Colston from Stafford, Virginia. We want to thank him for calling. We want to thank Richard Mull. Oh, my God, do we want to thank Richard Mull. calling in from Garden Grove, California. You know, I just got to say, Richard Call tonight was just pizza loving good. That's what Richard Mull's call was. I mean, it was just deep dish pizza loving good. It was rich, Richie. That's what it was. It was rich. That's good stuff. Sean is yawning. I can't do it. Michael, I cannot do 1 hour. What the heck is wrong with me?
Yes, we can.
Well, we've done it before, but we're now at 80 minutes. But I'm cutting it off. We've got emails, we've got other calls. I'm cutting it off. That's what I'm doing. We'll get to it next week. But here's what we're going to do, folks. Because next Wednesday night is the night before Thanksgiving here in the United States of America, we're going to have the live webcast on Tuesday night. Frankly, to satisfy the requirements of Mr. Sean O'Halloran, because, well, I'm not going to say why. But we're going to be live Tuesday night. We'll re-air on Wednesday night, and then it's going to be available always on the archive. So we'll be live Tuesday night next week. And, Mikey, I can't thank you enough. Dude, this is to the saving of our soul. You guys don't understand how important this is. Do not ignore the gospel. Michael, if people ignore the gospel, they have ignored their soul. They have ignored their intellect. They have ignored their emotions and their will and their ability to make good decisions. This is not about our standing and our place in God. This is about our ability to cope. You said in the last e-newsletter, Michael, this is as functional and as important as air and water and food. That's how important you perceive the gospel to be.
Yeah, I do. Definitely.
Oh, dude, you can do better than that. I know. But you're being respectful.
I know.
You're being respectful.
We're signing off.
And I respect that. All right. So that's what we got. Just go to gospelrevolution.com this week. Download the Tampa Summit. Talk to Jeff Robertson at the number at the top of the homepage. And that's it. We're going to call it a night.
Thanks, Glenn.
I got tea and honey waiting for me from Carla. And I got Sean being very, very patient. Sean is a man of the gospel. That's all I have to say. And we're going to talk to you Tuesday night, not Wednesday night, if you want to come on live. But we want you to come on live always. And then we'll be here for as long as we're here. So until next time, thanking everyone. This is Glenn Klein Online saying, Shalom, everybody!